announcements before the service begins. There is still time to train for the Hope Center's run walk. If a 5K seems like too much, you may not understand just how slow some of us are. But there will also be an LCUUC walkers. We have 6 runners and 3 walkers to date. See Eric Larson or Sue Lewis for more information. Over there. Now get ready for some puns. Do you pine to get to know more children and youth at LCUUC? Would you like to branch out and help spruce up our church at the same time? You can find your grove in the social hall, where you might have noticed a deciduously large helping tree has sprouted this September. September. You are invited to take part in the Helping Tree Project. Please read the posters and the leaves found in the social hall and in each RE classroom. The idea is to choose a small stewardship activity and partner up with a person from another generation. Working together in this way will ensure that our church home is cared for as we grow. Don't leave all the work to someone else. If a child or youth asks you to partner up to complete a small task for a few minutes before or after church, we hope you won't be a sap. If you see a task on the adult tree that is barking your name, know that you will become popular if you step up and help out. So please, check out the Helping Tree Project. These acorny jokes have got to stop.
Thank you.
In our lives, it can happen at any time. The coming of love, the coming of light. You wake and the candles are lit as if by themselves. Stars gather and dreams pour into your pillow, sending up warm bouquets of air. Welcome into this place where our lights and our dreams can pour forth, flashing fire from our bones. Come, let us worship here together. Please take a moment to say hello or just introduce yourself to the people around you this morning. Light of this chalice shine like a star, so that we may seek, expand, and learn. Would you please stand in body or spirit and join us in singing our opening hymn, number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Forgive. And conversation in our social hall after the service. And I'll let you know there is a spectacular array of goodies, thanks to Patty Walker's baking team, who provided for the Safe Zone training yesterday.
You don't even have to hurry, there's so many. Please take a moment at this point in the service to turn off or silence those electronic gadgets you might have with you today. And again, welcome to all here today. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us. I was raised in northern Kentucky on the very edge of the South. And growing up, when we went visiting, especially further down in Appalachia, it sure wasn't uncommon to hear, "Come on in, sit a spell, take the weight off." Now, some of you may have even heard this a time or two in your own travels. But what you may not know is that the money in your pockets has weight. So each and every one of those coins and bills is contributing to your general exhaustion. I could never let you remain sober and be a good Southern hostess. So let me say to you now, come on in, sit a spell, please take the weight off. The morning offertory will now be given and received.
Well, good morning. Good morning.
Sometime not too long ago, somewhere very near here, a group of little trees began to talk about the fact that fall was coming. "I love the fall," said the littlest oak tree, hugging her branches close. "My leaves turn the prettiest colors, and lots of people walk by on their way to church, and they say how pretty I look." "Well, I love the fall too," said a slightly bigger maple tree. "My leaves look like fire, all red and orange, and squirrels play in my twigs. It tickles." He laughed and shivered and rustled in the wind. A slender little birch tree shook her head. "I don't like the fall," she said. "Just when my leaves look the best and I've got them all arranged, they start to fall off. And one day when I wake up, they're all laying on the ground ready to blow away." She looked like she was ready to cry, and she said, "I don't want to lose all my pretty leaves." A chestnut tree waved his branches wildly, shaking chestnuts all around and almost bonking a squirrel. "I don't want to lose my leaves either," he said. "Last year the wind blew all at once and half of them fell off. I had two clumps left way up here. I looked like somebody glued a bush to my head. I just don't want my leaves to blow away," the littlest oak said. "Can't we do something?" A big elm tree who'd been listening leaned over and patted the little oak on the top of her tallest branch. "The leaves have to fall," he said. "They blow and crumble into the dirt. It gives us the food to grow next year." The birch cuddled a bird who was trying to find bugs up in her leaves. "I don't want to starve next year," she said. The little oak thought for a minute. "Hey, I got an idea. How about if we all keep just some of our leaves?" Chestnut sighed. "Then we'll all look like somebody glued a bush to our head." "Well, what if somebody else took some of our leaves," Maple said, "and we let the rest fall?" The other trees stared at him, wondering what the heck he was talking about. "Well," said Maple, "Oak had a good point. Every day we hear people going back and forth, talking about things like, I need help with this, and why doesn't anyone do that? What if this year we do keep some of the leaves, and each time we hear about a job or a project or someone who needs help, we write it on a leaf?" "And then what?" said Chestnut. "This sounds boring." "Well, we tell people to pick them," said Maple, "and then they can help with the job on it." "But they'll throw the leaves away then," Birch said, "and they'll be totally wasted. Nobody saves one or two leaves." A great big tree cleared his throat and said in his big deep voice, "Maybe I can help." All the little trees looked up in surprise. "If each of you saves some of your leaves and puts the jobs on them, you can ask people to help each other and to do the jobs. But if each of you tries to stick your leaves back on when the jobs are done, you will look a little strange." "I'll stick them on my branches instead. The leaves from the oak and the chestnut, the birch and the maple, I have room for all of them. And all of you will be able to see your beautiful leaves whenever you look up." He shook his head at Chestnut, who was making faces. "And no one will look like they glued a bush on their head." The little trees loved the idea. It would save the leaves and help people out too. So each time they heard someone passing, they wrote the job on a leaf. Today, when you go to RE, you'll see our helpful little trees and their leaves. And the RE teachers will tell you how to pick your leaves, how to find someone to help you, and how to put them on the big tree when you're done. No matter what age you are, there will be leaves for you to pick. And each of us can help the trees see their beautiful colors whenever they look up. Thank you all for listening to my story, and would everyone please help me to sing the children to their classrooms? I'm going to use Go Now in Peace. The words are written in your order of service.
Thank you.
larger than usual number of RE teachers and helpers going with kids. Today they're going to be kicking off our wonderful Helping Tree project and the RE season. So what an amazing source of light in our world. This is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns. And we do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. Would anyone who has a joy or a sorrow to share, please raise your hand, and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Hi, I'm Sonia. I have to leave with the teachers in a minute, but I wanted to light a candle for a gentleman who's become very dear friend in the last year and a half. He's had a huge impact on my life. He's a World War II vet and an amazing person, and his life is starting to fade now. And I just want to put some energy out into the world that he does not have to stay and linger and suffer, and that he can go quickly as he wishes. You'd all keep him in your hearts this week. I appreciate it.
And I just want some thoughts for my dear sister who's suffered from polio as a child and diabetes and had to have her leg removed. And I'm just hoping that this will be after rehab and maybe prosthetic, that this will be a time for things again to get much better for her. So that's for her and this candle. Thank you.
I'm Sue. Sort of have three candles. One for my sister-in-law Diane, who is in treatment for breast cancer and ended up in the ER this week with heart problems, but they seem to have stabilized now. And then two of my coworkers, one whose three-year-old daughter is at Children's with leukemia that was just diagnosed, and she is now out of ICU and in the oncology wing and improving. And another whose nephew was in a car accident with the drunk driver in Minnesota, and his friend who he was driving with was killed. And he is in ICU with traumatic brain injuries and responding to commands, and they're hopeful that he will recover, but it's going to be a long haul.
Hi, it's Karen. Light a candle of joy. Our younger daughter, Allison, this week took her to Colorado, where she is doing as she calls it, her life school for a year. She's going to Bible school in Ravencrest. And she's on a good path. I felt really good about leaving her there, and it's focused on nature and the Bible, and I'm proud of her for doing it.
This is Jim. If you would light a candle of great joy for member Ray Brosh, who was touch and go after some valve replacement on his heart and is looking forward to a full recovery now.
I'm Bahar. Please light a candle of joy for the wonderful mistake in our order of service. We will not be serving any people at the potluck next week. There's a little blurb that says, please bring someone to class. This is Fran, and would you light a candle of joy
for our member Diane McBain, who is recovering very well from surgery she had last Thursday. And she'll be back here in a couple of minutes.
Hi, my name is Claire. I light a candle of joy. I started a fitness boot camp, and this last week was my first week. It's something I've never done before, and although I'm a little sore, it feels pretty good.
And we light the last candle today for all those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today. Today's first reading is an excerpt from Pale Blue Dot, A Vision of the Human Future in Space by American astronomer Carl Sagan. A tiny blue dot set in a sunbeam. Here it is. That's where we live. That's home. We humans are one species, and this is our world. It is our responsibility to cherish it. Of all the worlds in our solar system, the only one, so far as we know, graced by life. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering. Thousands of competent religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there on a mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors so that in glory and triumph, they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings, how eager they are to kill one another, how fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have of some privileged position in the universe are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known to harbor life so far. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit, yes, settle not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience.
There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known. The mind mirror illuminates all ingeniously. Its penetrating, limitless rays reach everywhere in the universe. Without exception, everything is reflected in this mirror. The whole universe is a gem of light, beyond the terms of in and out. Please join me now for a moment of silence, meditation, or the spirit of prayer. The second reading today is the Ayat An-Nur, or the verse of light. It is the 35th verse of the 24th surah of the Quran, Surah An-Nur. The verse is renowned for its remarkable beauty and imagery, and perhaps more than any other verse, lends itself to mystical or esoteric readings of the Quran. The verse was very commonly used in the decoration of mosque lamps. It reminds us, as you use, that however we find the ultimate, it must be a source of light to guide in dark places. Allah is the light of the heavens and the earth. The parable of His light is a niche wherein is a lamp. The lamp is in a glass, the glass, as it were, a glittering star, lit from a blessed olive tree, neither eastern nor western, whose oil almost lights up, though fire should not touch it. Light upon light. Allah guides to His light whomever He wishes. Allah draws parables for mankind, and Allah has knowledge of all things. Please stand in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 118, This Little Light of Mine.
I'd like to invite the choir members to come out. We kind of forgot about that.
Everywhere I go, my glory shines.
in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the breath of God hovered over the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. For some of us, this statement is a meaningful theological construct. We may believe that the divine created from the dreaming darkness a spark and blew it into flame. Excuse me. For others of us, the story may sound a little different. Perhaps something like this. In the beginning, the universe was filled homogeneously and uniformly with an incredibly high energy density under huge temperature and pressure. And the density was very rapidly getting bigger and cooling. Approximately 30 seconds into its expansion, a phase transition caused a cosmic inflation during which the universe grew exponentially. After the inflation stopped, the universe consisted of plasma filled with quarks and gluons and every other elementary particle. Temperatures were so high that particle and antiparticle, matter and antimatter pairs were being continuously created and destroyed. And at some point, an unknown reaction occurred, leading to an excess of quarks and leptons, and matter was created, and there was light. Culture after culture, religion after religion, as human beings attempt to understand and explain and hand down the story of the creation of the universe, repeatedly it comes down to one thing, light. The thing that makes the formless darkness visible. The very first binary that a baby crashes into after 9 months in warmth and darkness. The first thing we know after entrance into the world and a sudden blinking of eyes and flailing of limbs, our own personal Big Bang happens. We open our eyes and let there be light. For science, light and heat are physical properties. Our reading today from Carl Sagan's Pale Blue Dot refers to the planet Earth as a tiny blue dot set in a sunbeam. And he points out that our planet is a lonely speck in the cosmic enveloping dark. For Sagan, the accident of the sun's light shining at just the right distance from the Earth to allow life is a humbling reminder that we are so very small, and what we have against the darkness is one another. Here we are, and here we will stand, because there is nowhere else to go. The light is both the very real cause of our existence and the reason we must learn to cherish one another. As far as we can determine right now, Earth is alone in that cosmic sunbeam. Scientific explosion of matter or the hand of the divine, this place, this planet, and the scientific reality of heat and light are where we begin. But human beings aren't great at existing in a world of pure reality. We create elves and fairies, Santa Claus and dragons. We are creatures of metaphor and imagination. It's how we understand the world best. We tell ourselves stories. As our ancestors tried to make sense of the world around them, light became connected to both good and God. For the Egyptians, there were the sun gods, Ra and Amun. Japan had Amaterasu, took me hours to get that right, who was a sun goddess. Greece and Rome had Apollo, the Hittites, Hepa. The Aztecs one that I will not even attempt to pronounce, but it certainly sounds very dignified. There were Inti and Liza, Lu and Habar Kashina, Mithra, Shemesh, Sol and Surya and Utu, and too many more to count. They could look up and see the sun in the sky and interpret it as the burning eye of something. It became the divine itself, or sometimes the mobility source, the chariot of God. However they looked at it, there was a sense of deliberateness attached to it. It somehow became benevolent warmth, a desire for human existence. Our second reading today, the Ayet Anur, is a beautiful example of a more developed view of the divine, as both the physical and metaphorical source of brightness in the world. Commentary by an ancient Muslim scholar, Ibn Jazayah, says, "Light both designates a reality, the light that the eyes perceive, and is also a metaphor for the meanings that are perceived by the heart. So the interpretation of the piece we heard this morning is that Allah, the Divine, possesses the light of the heavens and earth, and has also described himself as being light. As you would say that that man there, Zayed, is generosity, when you want to stress the fact that Zayed is generous. If Allah meant only the light which is seen by the eyes, then the meaning of the light of the heavens and the earth is that he created the light which they contain. He created the sun and the moon and the stars, or he created them all and brought them into existence from non-existence." As the verse goes on into detail of how Allah's light is a lamp which makes a glass which surrounds it shine as if it were a star, it gets very complicated. We start to get a much more detailed picture of ways we can look at illumination. And by now, some of you are wondering whether my lights have gone out and whether this is simply anything we need to worry about today. As you use, we're not called to any one theology, but to a recognition of a series of principles. And as we work toward aligning ourselves with these principles, one of the questions we have to address is, what are we called to do in the world, and how am I called to behave? By looking at light in all the ways that it manifests itself, we can maybe, just maybe, start to answer that question. From the readings this morning, and from our own experience, we know that light can be looked at in different ways. First, there's the source of light itself, the luminary. The sun is a luminary, a light bulb, a fire, an LED, a neon beer sign. The luminary is the actual cause of brightness. Metaphorically, this is still pretty straightforward. A luminary is the source from which the light of illumination, or the understanding of light, comes. Our meditation today, which was part of a larger Buddhist meditation, uses the human mind as a luminary. For some, a god or goddess takes this role. For others, a greater spirit of humanity. For others, there is no luminary outside of their own head. And that's all okay. The problem we have is that our society doesn't always do well with us recognizing ourselves as luminaries. There's an old Southern saying which sums it up nicely. If someone appears too confident in themselves, the phrase is, well, she just thinks the sun shines out of her rear. We live in a culture that oohs and ahs over works of charity and kindness, but when all is said and done, we aren't encouraged to take primary credit for the good we do. Many of us are raised in religions that make the divine the only possible luminary. And over the years, we absorb a vague or sharper sense that the good we do in the world is only because we have followed some greater example, as if we alone are not good enough. Many of us have heard the Christian scriptures that tell us to let our light shine, but follow it with so that others may see your work and glorify your Father. God or Goddess, Spirit of humanity, or you by yourself, it's okay to be a luminary. It's okay to find a luminary outside. But you are enough if you feel you are. This brings us to the second type of light. Second type is the visible radiation from the luminary, not the source, but the beams it puts out. This is the metaphor for light that we typically see in Jewish and Christian and Muslim thought. If God is the source, then the beams are God's power in the world, as seen through the actions of humans. For many of us, this is a comfortable place to see ourselves and to work from. We recognize something external that we strive to assist, or to emulate, or to promote. That can be a divine presence, a spirit of humanity, a natural order, wilderness. It is where we find our peace and direction. It becomes our luminary or our source. It teaches us how to do good in the world. This is one of the reasons why, as you use, we are called to develop our own theologies and to search for answers to our big questions. It helps us to derive our own moral and ethical codes and decide if these should be based on our own knowledge and scientific evidence, on belief in something greater than humanity, or on some combination or different theory altogether. We are answering for ourselves the question, am I the light source or the light beam? Does my status change from situation to situation? How and why am I called to do good in the world? The third type of light is brilliance, the light reflected off of things and unconnected to the source. We don't get to pick how we engage in this one. It's sort of like throwing a rock into the water. You'll never know where the ripples will go. Each of us brings brilliance into the world, whether we are acting as a light source or a light beam. You get up a little early this morning, and so you stop to bring donuts into work, and someone grabs two and doesn't have to spend the singles in his pocket on a Starbucks cake. And so at lunchtime, he pays for the woman behind him whose baby keeps crying and who seems as if she could use a break. And she goes home and hugs her husband extra tight and has more energy to talk tonight. And together they decide it's time for her to go back to school. And she becomes a teacher who will one day change the world. And it's all because you bought donuts. Brilliance is the gentle light that helps the arc of the universe bend toward justice a little faster and with a little more strength. Because it completely avoids the question of why the good is happening and just lets it be. Light source or light beam, reflected brilliance, all are different and all are dazzling and all can be you. Get up a little earlier and buy those donuts and let there be light. pay it forward or pay it backward or just be good to everyone you see and let there be light. Let your light so shine before humanity that they see your good works and glorify you or God, Buddha or Kuan Yin, Christ or a small stone or a frog in a pond, and let there be light. Do not be afraid to shine in the dark like a captive star, and let there be light. Amen. We do have just a few moments for a polylog this morning, so if you have something you want to say, the others will be coming around.
One of the first times we've been speechless, and I'm here to say well, thank you. Thanks for that homily, or for the sermon. As we're sitting here thinking, or as I'm sitting here thinking about the metaphor of light, the metaphor that comes to mind is from the prophet Rumi, the womb is the place where the light enters you. And the past year and a half, 2 years, I've kind of started to learn that just in going through my own healing journey, but also as I visit patients at Frater as part of my volunteering, because it's something I enjoy, one of the things I'm really noticing, because I'm trying to see in the moment, I'm trying to live that way. And as I sit and I meet with patients, I find that happens. We get so preoccupied with what's happening in our lives. It's just so easy to do. And when I'm sitting and talking with somebody about what they're going through, nothing matters. It's like this moment is just sacred, which is really awesome. And so I think about that. I think that's one of my favorite sayings actually right now. So today's sermon just brings that to mind.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts and on light. And one thing that occurred to me, and I'm sure there's lots of interpretations that can be put to it, but certainly as when you're young and your eyes are strong, light is it's not as important to you that you realize it, but as you age and lose your close-up reading ability, you just find you just really need a lot more light. And so it just becomes more and more important to have good light. And I'm sure there's some kind of philosophical way to look at that, but that's my personal observation. I really care more about light.
I'm reminded of a verse from a Leonard Cohen song. There's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in.
Although we have extinguished the chalice, we go knowing that the warmth and light of this congregation remains with us forever. Will you please stand in spirit or actually as you may and sing hymn number 124, Be That Guide. Standing for the benediction. The warmth to sustain life on a floating ball of earth and water, a source of goodness in the world, a reflection of positivity and clarity. In all its forms, let there be light, peace, and may it be so.